You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Today, my guest is John Rapoport. John is the author of two explosive collections, The Matrix Revealed and Exit from the Matrix, and was a candidate for a U.S. congressional seat in the 29th District of California. Nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, he has worked as an investigative reporter for 30 years, writing articles on politics, medicine, and health for CBS Health Watch, LA Weekly, Spin Magazine, Stern, and other newspapers and magazines in the U.S. and Europe. John has delivered lectures and seminars on global politics, health, logic, and creative power to audiences around the world. You can sign up for his free emails at www.nomorefakenews.com. So let's welcome John to the show now. Hi, John. How are you?
Great. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Well, it was such a, you know, I read your most recent blog, and it was so powerful, and it also funny in a kind of a black humor kind of way that I thought I have to have him on the show because everybody should be signing up to read your blog.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So you're probably one of the few journalists that I've read on the Internet that's posting or telling things like they really are. And what are some of the real news items that you're reporting on, and what's the condition of mainstream media as it is today?
Well, recently I've been reporting on the media and what it's doing, the demise of Meet the Press, the old venerable television show, and the imminent demise of the Washington Post that's been sold to Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon, to just show people that these tired old relics are being flushed down the toilet for various reasons and trying to explain what's behind their death and why they're really fading out of public life as opposed to the reasons that other journalists like to assess, because they're all in the same fraternity and they like to heap praise on each other and reflect back on the golden days of journalism, a fairy tale to be sure, and say that, you know, we're going to now resurrect all of that and it's all going to be wonderful and so on and so forth. So I think people really, really need to recognize what's happening in the world of journalism, which is basically that stories are presented without any context at all, any deep, authentic context, one after another. And this is a form of mind control because it baffles the mind. Mm-hmm. It doesn't allow the mind to make any connections with anything that is authentic, and therefore it creates a kind of hypnotic flow where there is so much untruth, so few connections being made, that it's all very mysterious and absurd. So that's what you get when you read the New York Times or you watch CBS Evening News. And this is actual hypnotism that follows the principles of putting people in a trance.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, they're all propaganda, and they're self-referencing circles. And since they're all on the same page, being basically run by the same elite groups, there's nothing there that's going to be accurate or true. And unfortunately, people, like you said, fall into a kind of a mind control numb, and believe that these talking heads are actually discussing something real when they're not.
Yeah, I mean, imagine what would happen if suddenly on the NBC Evening News, they led with a story about quantitative easing, and they talked about how this really was printing, creating endless amounts of money out of thin air. And then they referred the story to its source, which is the U.S. Federal Reserve, and then they began a serious discussion of what the Federal Reserve actually was, which is a private bankers pretending to be a government agency and having absolutely no controls on them, and therefore able to create inflation, deflation, depression at the drop of a hat, and undermine and destroy the entire economy of the country. Now, if they led with a story like that, and then they sent reporters out into the field to actually find out the facts and the history of the Federal Reserve, within about a week of pounding on this story, their ratings would go up by maybe 500% at least, because essentially people are waiting for this kind of news. This is what they really want in their hypnotic state. They want to be awakened, because nobody really wants to live in that kind of trance state. And so these news giants that are doddering old fools could actually resurrect themselves and become wildly popular to the point where the New York Times could print two, maybe even three editions a day on the newsstands if they were pounding on some incredibly important story like the Federal Reserve, and, you know, start making a fortune instead of drowning in a sea of red ink. But they, of course, won't do that. And this is the trap in which they've caught themselves.
Well, of course, we know what happens to anybody that gets out of line. They are removed either physically, or they somehow mysteriously have heart attacks or car accidents.
Yeah, or they lose their job.
Yeah, exactly.
Core. Yeah, that's right. So the idea that this could happen is, of course, a fairy tale, but it just goes to show what would happen if these news organizations as a whole had enough guts to buck the system. They would prosper. They wouldn't fail. So it's left to alternative news sources to fill in the blanks and make the stories real, connect the dots, go back to the fundamental underlying truths that give rise to these truncated, absurd stories on the news, and make them make sense.
I've heard the rumor that many of the news anchors that are on today really don't enjoy having to have the script handed over to them and being told that they can only talk about certain subjects, and there's a whole encyclopedia of subjects that they're not allowed to delve into.
Well, that's a nice idea. I think in reality it plays a little bit different than that. For example, the three big anchors, Brian Williams, Scott Pelley, and Diane Sawyer, are basically the managing editors of their own news departments. So they decide what the script is going to be for the evening news broadcast. However, you're right in the sense that they know that there are only certain stories that they can cover, and the ones that they do cover can only be broadcast in certain very, very limited ways. But as far as an encyclopedia is concerned, they learn more by osmosis, I would say, than by direct command from the executive boardroom. These are not dumb people with very low IQs. They they get to understand the business that they're in and how it's shaped, who shapes it, and therefore what they can say and what they can't. If they step out of line, they're gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they know this. So it's a kind of voluntary slavery, you might say, that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
They agree to the deal, the covert deal. And words don't really have to be spoken anymore. The major media in this country are now such a machine that they run on their own steam.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And whenever there is a story that pops up out of the hopper that's dangerous, it's cut off at the knees. For example, Fast and Furious. That was covered at CBS by Cheryl Atkinson, who is one of the only remaining investigative reporters in the mainstream in America. And so she began to blow the whistle on that, and when she got halfway into her investigation, the story stopped.
Mm.
And whether or not it happened as a result of a direct order, it doesn't have to come down exactly that way. Her editor can say something like, well, I think we've covered enough of this. People now understand what the basics are, and this is going to have to be settled in a congressional hearing with testimony. And so for the time being, we're not going to print anything on this. Or other stories are more important now, today, and tomorrow, that we have to give more space to. And although you're doing great work, Cheryl, we really don't have time to air this. You've already laid out the basics, and that's it for now. And that's it.
You know, since I don't watch the mainstream news, I'm not familiar with Fast and Furious. Can you briefly say what that was about?
Sure. This is not the first such operation, covert operation. There was Operation Wide Receiver under Bush and then under Obama and Eric Holder, who's the head of the Justice Department. There is Fast and Furious, and that is selling guns out of gun shops to Mexican drug cartels.
Ah.
And these guns would then be taken down into Mexico, presumably with the ability of the FBI and the ATF to track and trace where they go and to whom, as if somehow this is going to lead to arrests of key Mexican drug cartel figures, which has never happened, of course. Instead,
right.
What's happened is
right.
People have been killed with these weapons, including
right.
apparently several U.S. border agents. And this is just the beginning of the story. The story goes a lot deeper than that. But that's where it was cut off.
Wow.
And Eric Holder has never been forthcoming with all the details of what he knows and what he did. And despite testimony in front of congressional committees, the full story has never come out, and it won't come out of the mainstream. It's
right.
dead there.
Right. Right. Well, it seems that most of the people who are involved with government at the highest levels are themselves involved with all kinds of covert actions and, secrets. Black ops, and they're all in the pay of those who are running the world.
Exactly. Exactly. So imagine that you're a reporter now for the New York Times. Where do you go for your information when you write a story? Because you can't just write a story based on your own knowledge or investigation. That will never get published if you are writing news. You have to get quotes, supporting quotes from people.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a kind of standardized list of so-called reliable sources that you have to consult and get quotes from if your editor is going to greenlight the story and say, yes, this is authentic. And many of these people are in high positions, relatively speaking, in government. These are your sources. So if you start writing material on other subjects that contradict these sources or cross swords with the agendas of these sources and so forth, your access, future access to these people is going to be cut off. they're not going to talk to you anymore.
Right.
I experienced a little bit of that when I was in the journalism game. People would say, well, you know, I read your story about so-and-so, and, you know, it's absurd to even think that blah, 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 and don't call me again on anything. Well, you get enough of that as a reporter in the mainstream, and you're hung out to dry.
Right.
You can't write anything because you can't get quotes from anybody that means anything to your editor. So you're as good as dead in the business. Mm. And knowing this, reporters are trained like dogs to realize through experience over time that if they want to have continued access to these, quote, reliable sources, they can only write articles within certain parameters.
Mm-hmm.
That's how
mm-hmm.
the training is done. That's how the mind control is worked on reporters.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the people who are watching all this stuff eat it up, and then that's the only truth that they know, so they go repeating it and then convince everybody else that that's the reality. So we're really under the blanket of mind control of a consensus reality that's created from the top down in order to keep us ignorant of just about everything that is really going on.
Correct. The thing that I like to spend a significant amount of time on is educating people on how this consensus reality is built, the nuts and the bolts of it, because by osmosis, people then learn that reality is actually constructed. They understand that. Mm-hmm. It's not just that they say, well, that's a lie, and this is a lie, and that's not any good either. They get to see, in a way, how it's built, how the consensus is built, the fake consensus. And then they begin to understand that they also have creative power as individuals, and they can create realities mm-hmm. that are not of the normal consensus variety, which is the whole point. Because you can learn a certain amount of truth, you can learn how to differentiate to a degree between the truth and a lie, but if you do nothing with it, you're just kind of hanging out in space. What good does it do you? In fact, some people end up feeling worse off than when they were ignorant
mm-hmm.
because they don't see the creative component in building reality, whether it's false reality or true reality or imaginative reality or any kind of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is to show people through, you know, hundreds and hundreds of articles that I've written, how it's done, how the charade is invented.
Mm. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. Let's take a medical story. July 26, 2000, Journal of the American Medical Association, a review called Is Health, U.S. Health Really the Best in the World?, written by Dr. Barbara Starfield, who at the time was a revered health public health expert at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. So everybody's credentials all the way along the line were meticulous as far as the mainstream was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
In this review, she states unequivocally that the medical system in the United States kills 225,000 people a year. That's 2.25 million people per decade. 106,000 a year die from the direct effects of FDA-approved pharmaceutical drugs, and the other 119,000 die from treatment in hospitals. Well, to say this was a bombshell is a vast understatement. Now, the press is, meanwhile, mainstream press, busy creating the reality that we have the best medical system in the world, that new breakthroughs are imminent at every given second, you know, around the clock, that we're going to find the genetic underpinning of all disease and be able to cure all disease, extend the lifespan to 130 years, And new drugs are being developed all the time that are much more successful than older drugs, and state of mind can be regulated to a great degree to allow people to live happy lives, blah, 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 blah. Well, this bombshell in the Journal of American Medical Association suddenly goes against the grain, as deep as you want to, you know, look down into the grain. So what are they going to do about this, aside from giving it scant coverage, which, of course, they did, only scant coverage? They begin to rev up the machine, the propaganda machine, on the wonders of modern medicine. New articles are planted by PR professionals acting as reliable sources for reporters in the press and on television about new breakthrough discoveries in mental disorders, brain chemical imbalances are now being detected down to a much closer degree, which will allow for the development of new drugs. We're discovering more genes associated with illnesses. Funding is coming in from the federal government for new kinds of research programs on the genetic basis of human disease. We are going to have, as Obama announced, new community mental health centers across America, which will allow us to prevent the kinds of crimes that occurred at Sandy Hook and Aurora, Colorado, by detecting people before they become dangerous and they can be treated as mentally ill with cutting-edge drugs, blah, blah, blah. Each one of these pieces, each one of these articles is part of the edifice of constructing a consensus reality that the U.S. medical system is not only the best in the world, but the researchers are far in advance of anybody anywhere in terms of getting rid of all human disease and illness. And with each one of these articles, you can see, and I point out, if you probe deeply enough, that all of the assertions are patently false or have no basis in fact. They're just floating there. They're just put there as well-written puff pieces. Maybe we could be seeing possible breakthrough, future developments, so, you know, all sorts of key phrases that are dropped into these articles that are put there because they evoke a public response that's been tested and surveyed in the past to convince people that this bubble called the medical cartel is the most wonderful thing ever invented and discovered in the history of the human race. And so bit by bit, piece by piece, I analyze these pieces and show that they're completely false. They have no basis in fact whatsoever, and therefore they are being inserted into consensus reality to tighten the bars and close the doors on the prisoners. And when you read enough of this kind of reportage, you begin to see, oh, this is how they're doing it. This is how they're building the consensus. This is how they're manufacturing it. This is the way it works. It's not just a generality anymore. You see, it's as if you're walking down the street in New York and you can watch construction workers up on high steel putting a new building together, and you can walk you know, to a hole in the fence and see the big pit, and you can watch the whole thing develop day by day. That's a whole different situation. You're now watching the construction of reality. That's the way, from my experience, journalism ought to be done.
Well, also, it seems that people are not grasping their ability to think clearly by following through on what the end game is. That the end game of some of these things has to do with eugenics. I've seen reports that there are moves to put antidepressants in the our water, and things to reduce sexual drive, because they want to make sure that horrible things like Sandy Hook, which to me was a contrived event by the three-letter agencies designed for a certain effect, scare the crap out of us, and then we'll be ready for the next thing that they roll out, which is, you know, whatever it is that they've got planned out, you know, 10, 20 years in advance. And there are even some who claim that vaccinations are responsible for many of the, quote, diseases and problems like bipolar, autism, and the rest, ADHD and ADD, and that they're already, they already have the drugs developed for which they're creating the disease in itself.
You bet. You bet. Glad you brought these points up, because they're key points. When you see how the consensus reality is being built and shaped and constructed, then you are able to get to the end game and say, well, okay, what is it for? Why are they putting up this building, so to speak?
Mm-hmm.
What is their deep motive here? Is it just money? Is it just profit? Is that it? Because there are a lot of people in the mainstream who have caught on to the profit motive.
Mm-hmm.
You will see stories about drugs that are developed and certified as safe, and then they're loosed on the public and people die, and then they're retracted. And then the pharmaceutical company has to pay what looks like a giant fine.
Right.
$1 billion.
Nobody goes
to jail, of course. And then you look and you see that that particular drug has already made $16 billion in profit, and the pharmaceutical company had the $1 billion in a fund already set aside to pay the fine that they knew
exactly
they would have to pay, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the mainstream has begun to catch on to this level of the story.
Right.
But when it comes to connecting the dots with all of the toxic drugs that have been devastating populations, and when it comes to understanding, okay, so beyond money motive here, what is going on really? What is the agenda? Now we get into those things that you are talking about. And in my work over the last, I would guess, maybe 20 years now, it seems, what I've been pointing out in many different ways is that a system is being built to encompass every human being on Earth from cradle to grave.
Yes.
That's the design. That's
yep.
the pattern. And that system is the modern medical system. So from the moment of conception, you could say, of a child,
mm-hmm.
the doctor is involved. And everything that occurs from that point on is considered to be a medical condition, including giving birth and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And everything needs to be treated and drugged and diagnosed and parsed and so forth, all the way to the grave.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, there will be many diagnoses of diseases and disorders that don't exist at all.
Right.
But were invented, as you say, purely for the ability to then develop drugs that will, quote, treat these diseases.
Mm-hmm.
But actually have further toxic effects
mm-hmm.
and debilitate the person further, at which point he's diagnosed with yet another label and more drugs are piled on. And eventually death occurs. And then that person is sort of rung up on the cash register and also rung up as a slave,
mm-hmm.
a real slave to the medical psychiatric state, which is in deep collusion with governments all over the planet.
Mm-hmm.
We had the person. He was in our grasp. We regulated his life to a significant degree from cradle to grave. He made no unseemly noises. He went to his death politely. He paid his money.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept him in a state of debilitation the whole way so that he could never become a free and independent thinking and acting individual, which would perhaps become a threat to the state if there were enough of these.
Mm-hmm.
And this is our program. This is the program that we create. This is the reality behind the consensus reality.
Mm-hmm. And if there were any
if there is anything that extends life, or, and we know that there are, and various other things that enhance the one's abilities, mentally or otherwise, those things all are designed for the elite, and we never will ever see one of those in our own. We will not be able to use those things. We're kept out of the loop, and we're not allowed to even know about it.
Well, I would say that that's a correct assessment, purely on a common sense basis. For example, and there are many instances of this, let's take glyoxylide. It goes under a few different names, developed by a Dr. Koch in the early 20th century to treat cancer and various other diseases. There was no question that this independent doctor had significant success in treating cancer patients and also treating other diseases and diseases in animals. There were media stories about this at the time. Canadian farmers and ranchers were deeply indebted to Dr. Koch for passing along his medicines so that animals could be cured of various diseases. And Michigan farmers, because Koch was from Michigan, were loudly protesting at the time to Congress that they wanted to get hold of this medicine for their animals, and they didn't want to wait for some sort of bogus certification from the government. They
right.
didn't care about that.
Right.
So there was a kind of revolutionary breakout beginning to occur. Well, Dr. Koch was put on trial four times by the federal government in the United States for selling medicine that was not approved by the government and for supposedly duping his patients and this and that and the other thing. And they were never able to convict him. But eventually he left the country, settled in South America for the rest of his life because the harassment in America was just too much.
Right.
And so he was written off. There is no archive, at least public archive, which you can search to find the exact formula of his medicine. And he's gone. He's gone. The government basically closed him out. And there are many other doctors that I've tracked and traced over the years who have met a similar fate. And because of the same reason, that they developed treatments that would have made the drugs manufactured by the pharmaceutical industry obsolete and would have brought people back to a state of health. That's really the great crime.
Right, absolutely right.
You know, I mean, you're not allowed to do that.
No.
I had a discussion with a doctor friend of mine once who, a quite brilliant, but mainstream doctor all the way down the line. A good guy, though, in his own way. And so we were talking about the war on drugs and the war on this and that, and I said, well, you know, there's also the war on cancer. We lost that one, and he sort of laughed involuntarily. And he said, well, you know, there is this kind of story that goes around what would happen if somebody really developed a cure for cancer. Would he ever be allowed would it ever be allowed to see the light of day? Because look what it would do to the cancer industry.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't buying that, but I said to him, so, you know, don't you think the answer to that is obvious? You know, we're talking about a $1 trillion industry here that could be destroyed overnight by some guy working in a small independent laboratory in his office in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think is going to happen to that guy?
Well, and the same could be said for free energy. Look at all the people who have developed free energy devices who have either been paid off or disappeared or died due to unusual circumstances or had to move out of the country because the big oil interests and electrical interests are simply not going to allow the devices that have already been patented, you know, from up to 50, 60, 70 years ago, to be released. We're still slaving away with cars that run on gas and 50 years ago, we should have been on some other form of energy, which has already been developed and is sitting in vaults, most likely, or being used in underground bases and by the elite, who have all the cards in their sleeves.
Let me give you a startling example of that.
Okay.
That your listeners can look up and read about for themselves. The word is Passamaquoddy. P-A-S-S-A-M as in Martin, A-Q-U-O-D-D-Y, Passamaquoddy, up in Maine. Starting, I'm going to say, in the 1920s, maybe 30s, there was a plan and a program to utilize offshore inlets where high and low tide, you know, were at quite extreme levels. The difference mm-hmm. between high and low was great. And it was a really simple and obvious and common sense kind of system that you could utilize water to turn a wheel, in this case a turbine, and produce electricity. In the same way that a nuclear reactor produces basically steam that powers turbines to produce electricity. It's the same principle from the ancient water wheel to nuclear reactors. So this was a plan that JFK was very interested in from the time before he even became a senator from Massachusetts. He had a sense that this was a great idea, and he wanted to forward it, and he talked to people about it. And once he became a senator, he also talked about it. Now, what happened in Passamaquoddy was that over the decades, interminable red tape was thrown up. You had utilities companies, and you had governments, and you had, you know, commercial interests, and then you had the few and far between crusaders who said that they had a way of producing energy that could be utilized to light up small towns all along the coast and provide lots of electricity. And of course, by extension, if this were true, you could simply sail around the edge of North America and find many such inlets and do the same thing. And then you would have rivers, and who knows what could be done with them. In fact, I know that there are companies who produce very small turbines that can be placed in rivers anywhere, first world, second world, third world, and can produce local electricity. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to see that this is workable. And so when JFK became president, he continued to make a certain amount of noise about this, but it just collapsed in a pile of great red tape doo-doo because the interests who were against it just simply found ways to keep derailing the project and making it postponed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And to this day, nothing has really been done there. But when you add up all the reasons why the powers that be decided to kill JFK, you can add that to the bottom of the list as a footnote. And it's not very well known, but you can find it on the web, and you can read the stories, and it's there, it's still there, it could still work, it's still available.
Well, you know, speaking of JFK, it's funny that I stumbled across an article. I didn't read the whole article, but because I've done enough on this subject, but the subject of it was that one of the Secret Service agents had killed the president, that it was documented now. They finally figured it out, that one of the Secret Service agents had shot the fatal bullet. And, of course, it doesn't really matter. The people on the inside had people planted in several locations to take care of that situation, so it wasn't going to be, they weren't going to let him pass a certain point without him being taken out. And then,
yeah,
of course, we have 911 and Building 3.
Yeah.
A whole can of worms on that one.
Yeah. major. And, of course, Lyndon Baines Johnson's role has been researched much more heavily in the past 10 years. In any covert operation, like the killing of JFK, where, you know, any fool would say, this is a big-time operation. I mean, this is, you know, big. The way that it's worked is the people at the top understand that in the wake of the operation, there is going to be a great deal of public interest in it. Mm-hmm. And not just from mainstream journalists who can largely be controlled, but from independent investigators, people on the outside, all sorts of people who would want to find the truth. Mm-hmm. And so their job from the top is to hire people who will lay down false trails, incomplete mm-hmm. stories, sometimes mm-hmm. called limited hangouts, which are partial admissions of the truth that end up going nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Identities that are disguised, people who seem to have been involved, but when you spend 5 years tracking them down, you end up in an alley at midnight facing a brick wall and you've got nothing and you can't figure out how to go any further. All of this is part of the covert op when it's important enough. When what you're talking about is a kind of coup d'etat by, let's say, for example, a military-industrial complex,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to make sure that 20 years, 40 years, 60 years can pass, and people will still be confounded and confused and at cross purposes and screaming at each other as they try to say, this is the real truth about JFK.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it's turned out. You've got, I don't know, a couple thousand books maybe about the JFK,
mm-hmm.
the truth behind the assassination. You've got can you count them all, researchers? You've got different camps of researchers who hate each other. And so if you as an individual were going to jump into that cesspool and say, I'm going to find out the truth of JFK, you would know pretty much, if you had any common sense, that this was going to be the main work of the rest of your life.
Right.
And at the end of it, you might or might not find out anything important.
Right.
That's going to dissuade most people right there.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is how these covert ops are managed. And the mainstream press really has nothing to do with this because they're controlled to the point where they're taking all their cues on the assassination from so-called reliable sources, which I talked about earlier.
Exactly.
And you will also get book authors who will say, case closed, we now know Oswald acted alone and here's why and blah, blah, blah. And then the New York Times publishes a glowing review just to kind of keep things, you know, the way they want them kept. But outside the mainstream is where the real action is, and there you've got just an enormous amount of information, true information, false information, confusion, and it makes it extremely difficult to isolate, let's say, the 30 or 40 facts that you would actually have to assemble in a sequence to show what happened in Dallas mm-hmm. on November 22nd, 1963.
That kind of brings up the question of how you find your, how do you delve down deep enough to get to things that are truthful? I'm guessing that it would be internet research. How do you get to something that is accurately represented and not being covered anywhere?
Well, I started in 1982 before there was any such thing as the internet, so I had developed sources and methods long before then. And it mainly consisted of interviewing people on the record, off the record, comparing their stories, vetting these sources, people who would not talk to the mainstream. because they knew that whatever they said would be twisted, and they were taking a risk as it was, so why bother? Mm-hmm. And so I began to interview such sources. And in fact, one of my collections that you can read about at No More Fake News, The Matrix Revealed, part of that collection is a whole series of interviews with an anonymous insider who was a propaganda specialist and worked on some very big-time stories to twist them in the public mind so that the truth would never be discovered. And eventually, through a series of conversations and then vetting him, you know, to the nth degree as far as I was able to do that to confirm that he was who he said he was, I was able to do many, many sit-down interviews with him, at which point he said, look, the main thing for you to understand is how consensus is built, how that reality is built. And I was there, and I did it, and I'm going to tell you exactly how we do it and what the factors are. And he said, some of this is going to get esoteric. It's not just, you know, the simple stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We work with rhythm and time and space and manipulating these elements to put across false information that is going to sell. And those of us who know what we're really doing and are working on long-range operations to build a false reality have to work with many elements of mind control that are available to us. And so that's what he did. He just, you know, I asked him every question I could possibly think of and questions after his answers, and he laid out the entire story of how he and his colleagues operated on some major, major stories that were put in front of the public.
Wow.
Like AIDS, for example, and how it was really built and where it really came from and all of that and how it was disguised and so forth and so forth. So that was one of my major methods of getting information below the surface. And then there was, of course, in addition to that, looking into various groups that I knew from past experience were what I would call secret societies, although they have a public face, such as the Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderberg Group, CIA, and so forth, because...
Skull and Bones,
because you can see from the source of these groups how operations flow into the public. Mm-hmm. What are they trying to build? How are they doing it? What are their methods? And then you go to foundations like Rockefeller, Carnegie, and you see from their history what they have been building. For example, at the very beginning of the Carnegie Foundation, close to the beginning of the 20th century, as a very fine researcher named Edward Griffin was able to discover, there was a meeting of the Carnegie Foundation, and they determined from their research that the number one way to change a society was through war. But in the absence of war, the second most cogent way to do it was through education. And so they set out to pervert entirely the American education system so that it would produce people who were incapable of discovering the truth, and also incapable of setting up their own independent economic enterprises, but would have to fit into slots in the society that were preordained and provided by, you know, major corporations, major holding companies and their subsidiaries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the more that you delve into the Carnegie Foundation, the more detail you find on how they were able to pull this off. For example, in blotting out what you would call a rational study of history, twisting it completely and, in a sense, replacing it with another subject called, quote, social studies, which is just a melange and a mishmash of preposterous nonsense that apparently seems to, you know, educate people while actually programming them to believe certain things about groups versus the individual and freedom versus doing the greatest good and so forth and so on. So these are some of the methods that I've used over the years to get behind the truth. And in the medical arena, which has been one of my main focuses, the first book that I wrote, AIDS, Inc., in 1988, which was the first book to seriously expose the fundamental research fraud behind HIV, I interviewed, I don't know how many doctors and read how many medical studies and so forth, and that became a kind of fountainhead from which I could spread out and see a tremendous amount of the fraud within the medical cartel, in, especially in the research. And so that was, I think, something that lots of, you know, good investigators do, is they start with a major subject, and they discover, as they dig deeper and deeper and deeper, that they're finding out information that relates to numerous other subjects that are not going to be in the book, but they're going to keep those notes because it's going to stand them in good stead. And for me, for example, one of the major areas was vaccines. A lot of what I discovered about vaccines researching my book, AIDS, Inc., didn't actually have to do with AIDS, although some of it did, but it just had to do with the general subject of vaccines and how they are presented falsely to the public. And so in the wake of that book being published, I began to write and talk and lecture about vaccines, and that became a whole subject of inquiry for me over the years. So that's sort of some of how I've been able to develop my own methods for getting beyond consensus reality.
You know, in your recent blog about NBC's Meet the Press, the opening paragraph is so well written, I think is just brilliant. Would you mind if I read that on the air?
Please do.
Okay. So the unspoken premise of this week, Meet the Press and Face the Nation, goes like this. Given the fact that America is making constant war to expand the imperial corporate empire, the military-industrial complex is suffering a hernia from carrying so much money. Multiple agencies are spying on everybody all the time. The medical system in America is killing 2.25 million people per decade. Millions of acres of untested GMO food plus Roundup are a runaway health disaster. The Fed Reserve is a private banking monopoly posing as a government agency. The Mexican border is a sieve for the Sinaloa cartel to kick off their Washington-approved drug routes to a distribution hub called Chicago. Only the cops and thugs should have guns. The government-sponsored mental health monopoly called psychiatry is destroying the brains of countless numbers of children. Vaccines are filled with toxic ingredients. The federal government is pouring wet cement on the Constitution every hour of the day. More people are using food stamps than are working. Our children are learning how to become little robots in school. The free and independent individual is an anathema. Television is brainwashing 300 million people, and all presidents are vetted to ensure they'll support a globalist planet, none of which we'll touch upon in the next hour. loved that. I thought it was absolutely, you summed up everything so beautifully, and you know, I really recommend to everybody listening now and in the future to sign up for the blog, which is johnrapoport.wordpress.com. And we probably have to hit upon your sites now because we're just about out of energy.
We're almost out of energy too, because oil is going up in high prices, right?
Yeah, well, that's another racket.
Yeah, right.
Is there one thing you'd like to leave us with that would be thought-provoking? And then would you please mention your websites and where people can find you?
Sure. Well, the website is nomorefakenews.com, and that connects direct to the blog. And I guess if I have to leave people with one thing, it's this. If individual freedom still exists, and it does to a degree, that's our bottom line. Individual freedom and choice has to be protected to the nth degree in all ways possible, because from that freedom flows everything that we can do to overthrow this monopoly of monopolies that is trying to squeeze us into prisoners in our own land, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, to accomplish the protection of freedom, individuals really have to explore and understand what it means and what it's for and what it is and how tremendous and inherent it is in every individual human, and that it is a platform from which all manner of good action can be taken, including to use the core power of the individual, which is imagination and creative power, to do all sorts of fantastic and wonderful things, among which is creating new realities that bypass and supersede the consensus reality that we have now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my basic 1 minute message to your listeners.
Wonderful. Well, John, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and sharing your work with us. And it's such important work, and you're standing out there kind of as a lone gunman, in a sense. We know that's not true. But you're welcome back anytime. We'll check in again and find out more about your findings in the near future.
Thanks so much. I really enjoyed the conversation. And actually, the lone gunman theory here is false, too, because there are lots of us out there who want to ensure freedom continues to exist, among whom are you, certainly. And so join the crowd, folks.
Wonderful. All right.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.